This week, Congress introduced two articles of impeachment against President Trump, one for abuse of power and one for obstruction of Congress. Last week, we spoke with Soojin Hwang and Rachel Kirsch, who did research on how the impeachment inquiry against Presidents Nixon and Clinton affected the foreign policy of the United States. If you haven't checked out the episode yet, I highly recommend going back and listening to it. This is part two of the episodes dealing with impeachment, specifically now addressing how the impeachment will affect U.S. negotiations with North Korea. With no further delay, from the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yang Kwon, and this is Korean Context. We have with us today Troy Stangarone, Senior Director and Fellow at the Korea Economic Institute. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Would you give us, as much as is possible, a brief overview of the cause of this immensely complex impeachment inquiry surrounding President Trump right now?
So it began with a whistleblower account of a call President Trump had with President Zelensky of Ukraine. In that call, it largely focuses on the president's request for a favor for Ukraine to start investigations into either President Biden and his son, who was on a firm in Ukraine, and also the DNC server, which President Trump apparently believed to be in the Ukraine. And so that then led into basically an impeachment inquiry, since which we've had multiple members of the administration, both appointed and career civil service, come and testify to varying degrees about, one, efforts to withhold both military assistance and a meeting between President Trump and President Zelensky until announcements on these investigations had been announced. And so right now we're sort of at the point of trying to sort through how much documentary evidence of this is there and whether this behavior, which I think most people agree is inappropriate, rises to the level of impeachment.
And an impeachment inquiry in any case is quite traumatic to the political process of the country, but in particular, because of the president's role in foreign policy and national security, there's is often a concern that any disruptions to the president's ability to actually command and govern will have a huge impact on the U.S. foreign policy and especially very sensitive negotiations, such as the ones that are taking place right now with North Korea and China and elsewhere. But in our previous episode, a reviewed precedent set by impeachment inquiries against President Nixon and Clinton. And the takeaways from these cases was that the impeachment inquiry did not impact the overall trajectory of the respective administration's foreign policies. We still withdrew from Vietnam. Detente with Soviet Union went through. President Clinton still negotiated a peace agreement between Palestine and Israel. The IMF and the other international institutions still dealt with the Asian financial crisis. Do you think that the impeachment inquiry that is going on today is different from these previous cases?
Precedent would suggest that it's not, but there is one distinction that stands out, which is that in the case of Richard Nixon or Bill Clinton, both of their purported offenses were domestic in nature. They had no implication for foreign policy. So in the case of Richard Nixon, we all know this goes back to, the breaking into the former DNC headquarters in the Watergate Hotel. In Bill Clinton's case, it ultimately came down to questions about his veracity of whether he had had an affair with Monica Lewinsky or not, neither of which touched on foreign policy. Embarrassing, perhaps corrupt, and these types of things. But what is different in this case is that this impeachment process is specifically centered around the president's conduct of foreign policy and how he's used his power. And in this case, the allegation is that he has used his power to further his own influence and, in essence, bribe a foreign government. So much of foreign policy could potentially still continue on because there will be interests of other governments in dealing with the United States on various issues. That being said, one of the other things that has come out of the previous study is that areas where there were disagreement, there could be stronger pushback on Capitol Hill, for example. And so while not Korea-related, one thing that comes to mind specifically because President Trump has publicly asked China to investigate both Hunter Biden and Joe Biden is the trade talks with China. perhaps not specifically this interim deal, but when we get to a point where we have a final deal, it could receive significant scrutiny. One, because if perhaps it seems more favorable to China, the question might be raised, well, did China perhaps take and provide President Trump with information that would help him in his campaign if former Vice President Biden ends up being the nominee? So the very fact that, one, he's both publicly engaged in conduct related to foreign policy, and two, the accusation is related to foreign policy, it could muddle his ability to take and reach some of these agreements. And even if he does, it could make them harder to solidify domestically because it could raise additional questions about their veracity.
That's a very important point that you raise. Another key difference that some people have raised is the timing of the impeachment inquiry. Both President Clinton and Nixon faced these impeachment inquiries in the second term of their tenure in the White House. President Trump, of course, is still a year ahead of his reelection. Does the timing of this matter?
I think it does. Right now, the United States is living in a very partisan era. Now, that doesn't mean that partisanship didn't exist during the Nixon investigation or the Clinton investigation. Nixon case, it was only very late where Republicans broke against President Nixon, and then Democrats stayed firmly behind President Clinton. But the difference here is if you have an acquittal in the Senate, and that presumes, obviously, that the House does send impeachment articles to the Senate, it doesn't mean that President Trump is simply off the hook. The American people will then have to decide whether they believe it's worth reelecting him, knowing now what they know. Some have argued that because of President Trump's unusual nature, that the American people knew what they were getting in for and it won't matter. But that being said, it does change the dynamics. And it also raises an additional question for policy going forward. In the case of both Nixon and Clinton, even if Nixon hadn't resigned, and we'll say he had survived, there was going to be a limited period of time they were going to be in office. In the case of President Trump, you're talking about, depending on when the vote in the Senate is, essentially 5 years. And then the question also becomes, what precedent does that set for his behavior? Because if he is acquitted and he is reelected, then does that empower him to engage in similar tactics on other negotiations going forward in foreign policy? So the fact that he does have this time, both in terms of how it will impact his reelection and what it might mean should he be reelected, I think does make this different as well.
Those are really interesting points that you bring up and very important ones to keep in mind as we discuss, you know, how this will impact events on the Korean Peninsula. Of course, President Trump has been a key player in negotiations with North Korea. What does this domestic scrutiny mean for our engagement with North Korea, the U.S. engagement with North Korea?
Right now, it's created a different dynamic. We've seen both early in the impeachment process and when the U.S. delegation met with the North Koreans in Stockholm, and even more recently tied into this whole idea of a Christmas gift, the North Koreans have referenced that they don't want to be involved in a U.S. political ploy. In essence, they don't want to be something that Trump rolls out and says, here's my great victory, vote for me. On the other hand, this seems to be more an attempt for them to take and utilize this to place pressure on him, saying, you know, we're not going to simply cave to you easily or have some empty summit so that way you can declare victory. So I think it's perhaps subtly changed the North Korean negotiating position, because I don't think, you know, if we go back to Hanoi, clearly there was somewhat of a hard line negotiating position then. But I think it's changed both the public perception and perhaps the way the North Koreans view what they might be able to get from President Trump, that they might now have more leverage over him than they did before.
But leverage aside, we also have to contend with the fact that President Trump might simply have less time to deal with foreign policy. I mean, if he's going to be constantly monitoring the situation in Congress and are constantly under scrutiny from domestic voices, one can assume that he will have less time to engage with his foreign policy staff on the situation in the Korean Peninsula, much less other things going on around the world. When this has happened in the past with President Nixon and Clinton, there were discussions by analysts that said that the role of Secretary of State Henry Kissinger and also Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin were critical in these moments when President Nixon and Clinton were respectively distracted by the impeachment inquiry. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger was still able to take the lead in the foreign policy space, and Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin was able to take the lead in addressing the Asian financial crisis during the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Do you think that officials like Steve Biegun, who has been the chief negotiator for the United States on North Korea negotiations, do you think these staff are sufficiently empowered to advance engagement if President Trump becomes mired in the domestic controversy?
For President Trump, practically speaking, you know, his political future is on the line. While Bill Clinton didn't say much publicly about impeachment and they were sort of strict enforcement of like only certain people would talk about it during the Clinton administration, stories afterwards are that, you know, he was often consumed with it. One has to imagine, you know, Richard Nixon was, you know, this is, you know, a paramount moment in anyone's presidency. That being said, in terms of empowerment of other individuals, one of the things, this goes back to your earlier question about how this is different. We now know that, you know, Secretary Pompeo was on the call with President Zelensky. We know that he had at least two calls with Rudy Giuliani, who's been accused of running a side foreign policy. So at a minimum, Secretary Pompeo, even if he was an unwilling participant, and because we don't know all the details at this point, is caught in this as well. And, you know, he's a potential witness. So someone who normally might play an important role in foreign policy is going to be distracted as well. You have a situation to where you had a change of the national security advisor, John Bolton, who had very strong feelings about North Korea's gone. The new national security advisor, O'Brien, probably not as strong of a figure. And so in some ways, the Kissinger or Rubin type figures are out of the picture now. And Steve Biegun, who had been our special representative for North Korea policy, is now actually going to be Deputy Secretary of State. And he's going to be in a unique role in that he will both need to be empowered more generally to handle U.S. foreign policy, but he's also going to maintain a strong role on North Korea policy. So it will be interesting to go forward, and I would expect that he will probably be more empowered now, both in terms of having higher stature with the North Koreans, but also in terms of administration policy, because a lot of this may really come down to his ability to handle this, because Pompeo, as I said, is going to be distracted. The National Security Council dynamic has changed. And at this point, it's unclear who might replace him as special representative, but it's hard to see them as having the same stature as Biegun, especially given the time frames we're talking about. So Biegun will, I think, be a critical figure if we're going to reach some kind of deal with the North Koreans over the next, you know, either before their end of the year deadline or early next year or something of that nature.
Of course, this is something that was discussed at the very recent engagement between President Trump and Chairman Kim at the demilitarized zone between South and North Korea, that they would empower their negotiators to engage in discussions to hammer out some of these details. Now, you did mention the end of the year deadline. How is that affected by ongoing developments? Do you think the United States will be able to, will they even be able to sit down with the North Koreans before the end of the year? Not to mention the shortness of time that we have. We're already in December, but also because of the domestic controversies that we're facing.
When we look at the situation, this deadline, one of the challenges has been there, since Singapore, have only been essentially 8 days of negotiations over the last 18 months or so. And as you note, Chairman Kim had agreed to empower his negotiators, but the challenge is he hasn't. And so in some ways, the North Korean deadline is artificial, not in that they merely picked an arbitrary date, because I think there's a logic to saying, you know, setting impeachment aside, because this all happened before the impeachment, that we know in a campaign year, it's going to be unlikely the president would have the time to take, one, potentially strike a deal, or two, implement one. And so North Korea is going to want it to be implemented, so you want some certainty. But I think that has now shifted with this dynamic and that they're viewing it differently. Practically speaking, if the North Koreans said, you know what, we want to meet every day in December, that the U.S. would be there. So this really in some ways boils down to actually empowering the North Koreans themselves. And at the same time, North Korea keeps saying, you know, it's up to the U.S. to come up with acceptable proposals. That implies that North Korea knows what an acceptable proposal is. So perhaps the North Koreans actually need to start sending us proposals saying, you know, here's what we could do. Here's what we would ask you for in return. You know, does this work? In terms of, you know, North Korea's own behavior, there's also, I think, as the pressure rises domestically on President Trump, historically, we've often talked about this idea of foreign policy being a distraction from domestic, you know, problems. You've seen President Trump complain about the impeachment hearings going on while he's doing the NATO summit, which he said is important. I think there probably is somewhat of an idea on the North Korean side that perhaps they can utilize the controversy to raise pressure in the hopes that President Trump sees, well, maybe a big deal with North Korea might be something that I can distract from impeachment and show why I shouldn't be taken from office. But at the same time, then they can get a better deal than they would have in, say, the absence of all of this.
And you raise a good point that this does present an opportunity for the North Koreans to perhaps more strongly advance their positions while the United States is engaged in this domestic difficulties. And at the same time, you did mention that the ball is in North Korea's court right now. They need to empower their negotiators. They need to come and actually engage the U.S. negotiators at this moment. So this seems to be a slightly of a mismatch. Like, why are the North Koreans not reaching out to the United States when they do have some degree of leverage?
It's actually somewhat perplexing because there's the phrase, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Setting aside, skepticism in the United States that North Korea would ever give up its nuclear weapons program, the speculation has been that, well, they really want to do arms control negotiations. They'll reduce it, but they won't get rid of it, whether it's they're actually willing under the right circumstances to give it up. This is a unique time for them. President Trump has been willing to engage on a personal level that no other U.S. president has been willing to do. Because of his unconventional nature, he might be willing to make agreements other presidents wouldn't be willing to make. So in some ways, North Korea has a unique opportunity here that they seem to be missing. Now, whether that's because ultimately internally they'd long made a decision they were just going to string this out as long as they could, hope that sanctions weaken and just go back to like the status quo, or whether it's because we misunderstand the internal dynamics and Kim Jong-un wants some kind of agreement, but he keeps getting pushback that he can't overcome, or at least he can't overcome without certain U.S. measures. Some of this is unknown. But on the other hand, as I said before, whether it's empowering your negotiators or whether it's, North Korea putting forward new proposals itself, it does seem as though that if North Korea really wants something to happen here, this is a unique opportunity, but that they need to move forward. And whether this is because through the history of North Korea, they've been involved, yes, in the six-party talks and some other things, but have relatively little negotiating experience because of the nature of the regime to where it's top-down and you don't domestically necessarily negotiate much internally, or whether it's because they're misreading the political situation in the United States is unclear. But I do think when we look back at this moment, especially if nothing comes out of it, that this won't be a situation to where people say perhaps the U.S. missed an opportunity. This will actually be where the North Koreans missed what might have been their best opportunity.
Of course, this is somewhat still speculative. But in the case that President Trump is removed from office, how might that affect our engagement with North Korea, given the central role that President Trump played in initiating engagement with Pyongyang?
There's two things here. One is that because of the personal nature of his engagement, how does it affect North Korean engagement? Meaning they wanted a top-down process, they got a top-down process, and that might not exist under President Pence or, if Trump was impeached close to the election, and essentially it becomes a new administration from someone else. But at the same time, it's hard to imagine Pence being willing to engage on a personal level with the North Koreans the way Trump has. So U.S. engagement will change just, as a matter of fact. It's hard to imagine a, Democratic president, if they were to win the election, taking and sitting down without certain agreements in place beforehand, as President Trump has done. So I think the entire nature of the engagement changes. And the other thing to keep in mind is that Republicans have historically been very skeptical of engagement with North Korea. And so setting aside even perhaps Pence's own reluctance to meet directly with Kim Jong-un in the way Trump has, even if he were to remain president, I think the hold that President Trump had on policy in terms of the ability to prevent members of Congress from criticizing his engagement disappears. And I think you might see Republicans become more skeptical and hawkish on North Korea than they have been under a Trump administration. So I think it changes the dynamic and it probably makes negotiations more complex on the U.S. side.
A lot to think about as we approach both the deadline set by the North Koreans and also as the impeachment inquiry continues. Now, you did mention earlier that the impeachment inquiry itself will affect U.S. engagement with China because of the statements that President Trump made to the Chinese regarding investigations into Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. Are there other foreign policy areas that might be affected by the impeachment that will also have a knock-on effect on the Korean Peninsula?
So a lot of this depends on how the impeachment proceeds and whether Trump is removed from office or not. But, you know, we have very tense negotiations right now over burden sharing, so the special measures agreement. And a lot of this is being driven by the president's own belief that our allies don't contribute enough. Now, how much, you know, perhaps South Korea should contribute, you know, I think is something that should be open to discussion. But right now, the U.S. is pushing for essentially a 500% increase in contribution. So the question becomes, one, as impeachment goes on, if President Trump feels increasingly isolated in the need for victories, it could make him push harder on these demands rather than be willing to compromise. At the same time, were he to be removed from office, I have to imagine that a President Pence would quickly reach an agreement with South Korea to try and remove this type of issue from the table, and that it wouldn't be reflective of what we're seeing right now. So be it the SMA, be it how South Korea engages with North Korea going forward, because, you know, there's also this inter-Korean dynamic at play, or even perhaps be it the willingness of the administration to engage in the current disputes between Korea and Japan, because I have to imagine that if President Trump were removed, that a President Pence would want to try and find a way to try and remove these tensions as quickly as possible as well, because my innate instinct looking at his career is that he probably views alliances differently than President Trump. There are a lot of pieces at play here right now that could become worse if the impeachment continues, but doesn't necessarily remove President Trump from office or change if President Trump were to be removed from office.
On that point, any expectations as to what might happen in the months ahead with President Trump?
If you look at the polls right now, the American public is largely divided. It largely comes down to Democrats strongly supporting his removal, Republicans strongly supporting his acquittal. Percent of Republicans in favor has tended to flow, from what I've seen, I think between about 15-20% maybe in favor. Independents, it's fairly close to 50%, but most of the polls have been about like 48% in favor of removal. From a Republican senator's standpoint, in the absence of your base being supportive of his removal, even if you believe that he is guilty of what he is charged and that he is unfit for office, it's going to be very difficult to take and vote to convict him. It's been suggested, for example, some such as Susan Collins or Cory Gardner, who are in states that are not solidly Republican and who might face extremely difficult re-elections if they didn't vote to convict, might vote. But once you move beyond those who are in difficult political circumstances, this, at the moment, as we sit here today talking, doesn't look like a situation to where Republicans are willing to take and go against their base, even if they believed privately that President Trump should be removed from office. Now, that being said, there has been suggestions that the Senate might try to get Mick Mulvaney and Secretary Pompeo to testify. Bolton might come up. These figures, if they testify, and depending on what they say, could change the dynamics. But I would say at this moment, it doesn't look as though we're seeing a situation to where the impeachment process has moved beyond partisan politics. So I think at this point, I would expect, barring something changing the future, that President Trump most likely would be acquitted.
That is it for our episode today. Many thanks to Troy Stangarone for joining us. If you haven't already, please go rate Korean Context on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. They help get the word out about this show. You can also find more information about our research and upcoming events on our website at keia.org. You can also find the catalog of past events on our YouTube channel. Next week, we'll be coming back with an episode on the ongoing discussions between the United States and South Korea on defense burden sharing. It's going to be a great episode. See you next week.